Welcome. I'm Ethan Elkind, sitting in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. Later in the program, we'll be speaking with prominent journalist and co-founder of the independent Salvadoran news outlet El Faro, Carlos Dada. We'll talk about why El Salvadoran President Bukele cut a deal with the Trump administration to imprison deported detainees. But first, we turn to Hungary's historic parliamentary election. Last Sunday, voters delivered a decisive defeat to Prime Minister Viktor Orban, a close ally of Donald Trump, ending his 16-year rule. Orban was beaten by Peter Magyar, a 45-year-old former party insider, who ultimately persuaded a majority of Hungarians that it was time for change. With more than 98% of votes counted, Magyar's Tisza party is on track to win 138 seats. Orban's party, by contrast, is projected to take 55 seats, while the far-right Our Homeland party expected to win 6. So what's next for Hungary? And what type of changes can Hungarians expect to see with Magyar's party holding the majority in the next parliament? To unpack the parliamentary election that just happened, we're joined from Budapest by Flora Garamvolgyi, who is a journalist covering Central and Eastern Europe, who writes about Hungary for The Guardian. Thanks so much for joining us, Flora.
Thank you so much for having me back on the show.
So, Flora, many people in Hungary, I know, have reacted with relief and celebration after Orban's defeat at the polls. And you spoke to voters both before and after the election. So what was the mood like on the ground when it was announced that Orban had been defeated? And what were people telling you about this potentially consequential political shift in the country?
I have never seen Hungarians being this ecstatic. Everyone was crying, hugging strangers, just opening champagne bottles, and everyone was just so happy. And I think Hungarians and also Eastern Europeans are not really famous for smiling a lot, but I have seen a lot of people laughing, smiling, and celebrating that night. And they were also tearing apart Fidesz's billboards and posters on the street.
It sounds like an amazing environment. And I know for so many people there who have spent so many years under Orban's rule, this must have just been quite a relief for those opposed to his rule. But let's talk about who beat him. So Peter Magyar, 45-year-old former political insider of Orban's party. Can you talk about his rapid rise and his journey to this moment?
Absolutely. So he comes from the Fidesz establishment. He was the husband of former Justice Minister Judith Varga, and he became more well-known after a child sex abuse scandal in Hungary. And I think that was a case that united right-wing and left-wing voters. That was something that everyone agreed on that it shouldn't have happened. And he was a guest on Hungary's most well-known political YouTube channel, and he spoke out about the corruption and the level of corruption in the Fidesz party on that show. And I mean, more than 2 million people watched that show in a few days, and he just became super well-known in Hungary overnight.
So it's interesting that it was the corruption angle that seems to have ultimately brought down Orban. Were there other issues at play that Magyar was able to seize on for this big electoral victory?
Right. As I mentioned, corruption and this anti-oligarch sentiment was really strong when he started to speak out, but he also touched on all the issues that Hungary is dealing with, healthcare, education, just living standards in general. A lot of Hungarians are still struggling financially, and a lot of young people are leaving the country because of that.
So he still is a conservative politician, as far as I can understand it. A voter told The Guardian, "I feel like we still don't know Peter Magyar so well. All the rhetorical phrases he used, they sound very much like the way that Viktor Orban used to speak." Is that a fair characterization that he's conservative? Where do you see some of the core differences now going forward for Hungary with Magyar in charge instead of Orban?
I joined his press conference on Monday, and I definitely see some similar policies. So he's following along with the popular policies that Orban has, but he made a clear distinction between how he's going to handle transparency in his government, that he supports free press and he supports journalists asking questions, and he supports a transparent government. And he wants to dismantle all of the corruption that's going on in the country, but he's still supporting the popular family policies. And he also mentioned that he might have some clashes with the EU in the future, as Orban did, but he probably will have very different disagreements with the EU compared to Orban. He really emphasized that he's very different from the former prime minister. But he also followed along with some popular policies that Fidesz had.
And so what are some of those popular policies? It sounds like issues, for example, affecting the LGBTQ population, immigration in general. What are some of those policies that you think are likely to continue from Orban?
Well, he mentioned that he is still going to be strict with illegal immigration. And when we asked him about LGBT policies, he answered that he wants Hungary to become a country where everyone can love who they love. But he kind of gave us a vague answer. And he said that as long as they don't go against the law. But if you look at the laws in Hungary, they are super restrictive when it comes to the LGBT community. So unless he changes those laws, everything is going to stay the same in that sense. And the popular policies, as I mentioned, are the family policies as well, that are including that women with four children get a break from taxes, for example.
We're speaking about the electoral defeat of Viktor Orban in Hungary on Sunday and what that means for the country going forward. You're listening to Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Ethan Elkind, sitting in for Rose Aguilar. And we're speaking with Flora Garambolgi, a journalist covering Central and Eastern Europe, who writes about Hungary for The Guardian. I want to go ahead and open up the phone lines for anyone who maybe is Hungarian and listening in, or traveled to Hungary, or knows folks in Hungary, or if you just have questions about what we can expect with the new Magyar administration taking power in Hungary. The number to call to join the conversation, 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Now, given that Magyar is likely to keep the LGBTQ, sorry, anti-LGBTQ policies in place, what is the reaction that you've heard from that community in relation to this victory on Sunday?
Right. I think right before the elections, they were super hopeful, but now they are a little bit cautious if change is really about to come. I think they really appreciate the rhetoric that Magyar mentioned during this press conference, that he wants Hungary to be a free country in terms of who people choose to live with or love, but they are still a little bit concerned if Magyar is going to make substantial change for them, because right now the laws are super restrictive. So LGBT members of the LGBT community cannot marry each other and cannot adopt children either.
Yes, so it's still a very conservative government and population, it sounds like, are culturally conservative as well. So a lot of progress that would need to happen there, it sounds like. So talking about corruption, you know, it's interesting that this was the angle that ultimately led to Orban's defeat. I mean, we've seen these sort of right-wing authoritarian governments really enmesh themselves in corruption. Certainly we've seen that in the United States with the Trump family's crypto ties, among other pay-to-play to get pardons, etc. What now are the plans for Magyar to kind of go after the corruption from the Orban regime? Are there any plans to go after Orban personally?
He really emphasized that he wants to follow the law with every step he does. But he says that they have a plan for these individuals who were involved in high levels of corruption, that they have to take responsibilities for their actions And we will see how that goes. Right now, we haven't really heard an exact plan for that.
We also know that Vladimir Putin was a big supporter of Orban, and Orban seemed to be very much on the side of Russia when it came to the Russian-Ukraine war, the invasion of Ukraine by Russia. What is on the agenda now for Hungary's foreign relations with Ukraine and their role in that conflict?
Right. So Magyar mentioned that he wants to have stronger ties with the EU, repair our relationships with the EU and the West. He really ran a really pro-West campaign during his election campaign. And he often criticized Orban's relations with Russia. He said that he's not going to be necessarily the person who calls up Putin like Orban did, but he will pick up the phone if he calls. So kind of he was expressing criticism towards Orban even in that press conference. But he wants to kind of navigate that line of having good relations with both East and the West. When it comes to Ukraine, he said that the 9 billion euros that would go to Ukraine, he said that the case on that is settled when it comes to Hungary. So Hungary, the Czech Republic, and Slovakia got an exemption from the EU when it comes to that aid to Ukraine. And Magyar said that he is not planning on changing anything when it comes to that. And he also said that he is not really seeing Ukraine joining the EU in the next 10 years.
Well, and then the other loser, in addition to Putin and Orban himself, of course, and with the election, is Donald Trump and the Trump administration and the far right here in the United States that really hitched themselves to Viktor Orban. We had Vice President J.D. Vance traveling for a rally for Orban ahead of the election. From the stage, he endorsed Orban, even phoned Donald Trump. Orban had attended the conservative CPAC gathering, and in fact, his government was financing CPAC and other right-wing institutions abroad. Magyar, of course, Magyar has noted that his government will be investigating those expenditures and not financing them further, saying, quote, "I believe the state should never have financed them in the first place. It was a crime." That's from Peter Magyar, who defeated Orban. So what do you think is going to happen now in terms of the Hungarian government's and Magyar's relationship with the United States, with Donald Trump? How big of a setback is this for Donald Trump and his MAGA movement?
I think Trump and the MAGA movement really looked at Hungary and Orban as a model to follow. So Orban was a prime minister that had 4 consecutive terms. And he was super anti-immigration, and they had a lot of things in common. So MAGA really looked at Orban and Orban's success as something to study and something to follow. So that is definitely a blow. But we have heard Trump saying that Orban was his friend. That was an interesting statement. And he said that, he is looking forward building relations with Magyar, and he did not express any criticism against him so far. So it seems like Trump is open to having good relations with Magyar in the future. But it was definitely interesting to see J.D. Vance. I was there at his rally and the press conference, saying very similar things, especially at the rally, what Orban has said during these years. So it was kind of listening to a Viktor Orban speech, but in English.
Why do you think, just briefly, why Trump was so invested in this? Why did the Trump folks care so much that they would actually send a vice president in the midst of our war in Iran to rally support for Orban?
I think there are 2 explanations for that. One is that Trump was invited every single year to CPAC and he never came. He only sent in like a 1.5 minute long video message to Orban. Orban really, really wanted him to come. And I think that was kind of, him expressing support for him during these elections, sending Vance here. But also I think for Vance, he is, as we heard, is might be planning on running in the next presidential election in the US. And this could be him establishing his own foreign policy ideas visiting Orban.
We're speaking with Flora Garam-Volgyi, a journalist covering Central and Eastern Europe, who writes about Hungary for The Guardian. We're talking about the electoral defeat on Sunday of right-wing authoritarian leader Viktor Orban, or authoritarian-ish, I should say, but the elections have defeated him after 16 years in power. The phone lines are open if you have questions about what's going on in Hungary, what the future might hold, what this might mean for the rise of these right-wing authoritarian populist leaders across the globe. The number to call is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or email us with any questions or comments to yourcall@kalw.org. We have John calling in from Berkeley. John, welcome to Your Call's Media Roundtable.
Hello, everyone. Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for doing this. And my point is that Viktor Orban is a reflection of the rising fascism, authoritarianism. And so this is a huge win. And thank you, Viktor Orban, for stepping down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really interesting observation. First of all, a couple points there. Is this auguring a sort of backlash against this right-wing authoritarian movement globally? And then the concession, I think both those are really interesting points. Flora, your thoughts about what this might mean? Are these issues very local to Hungary, or do you think this is potentially part of a global trend we might see now?
I think it definitely could be a global trend. Hungary has shown the world that these kind of authoritarian-leaning leaders can be defeated domestically. So just people going to the polls in high numbers and voting, that really was the strategy to beat Viktor Orban. So that could show a trend. But I also think that Orban has plans for the future. And I think he will really focus on foreign politics, especially on building his far-right network across Europe. And I think he will just gather a group of far-right leaders and parties around him to come back stronger.
Mm-hmm. So it may not be like Glenn Close in the bathtub from Fatal Attraction. Hungary might see Orban rise again, or at least other countries around Europe might have to face more of his organizing from the far right. Also wanted to just touch on John's point about the concession. There was doubt leading up to the election as to whether or not Orban would concede. Would he take the sort of Donald Trump path of lying about the election results and fomenting a sort of rebellion, like we saw a version of that with January 6th? Was there concern around that? And were you surprised that he conceded so quickly?
There was a lot of concern around that, especially because we have heard Orban and Orban's ministers talking a lot about foreign interference. So I think a lot of people, including foreign diplomats in Budapest, they were really concerned about what's going to happen on Sunday. But I think it came down to with how much TISA won. So it was a 2/3 majority for TISA. And I think there was nothing Orban could have said in that moment but concede.
It was too decisive. And I know the turnout in the election was nearly 80%. 65% of voters under 30 supported Magyar before the vote, a huge percentage, a lot of mobilization among young voters. Can you talk about why they were anti-Orban? What was their role and perspective on this election?
For this generation, I think it was crucial that they go to the polls and show what kind of future they envision for Hungary. Because a lot of young people after university, they have to leave the country because, frankly, the salaries in Hungary are not at the level of other European, especially Western European salaries. So obviously, for young people, it was really about their futures and if they can stay close to their families, to their loved ones, to their friends or not. So I think that was a huge part of why young voters showed up to the polls. I have talked to a lot of university students in Budapest, and they seemed super involved in politics. They were really, really well educated on this topic, and it showed that they have done their research on who they want to vote for.
And since it's our media roundtable, I have to ask you about Magyar's plans for Hungarian media. Now, as he's a prime minister-elect, he used a landmark appearance on state-controlled media outlets on Wednesday to reaffirm his intention to suspend their broadcasts as soon as he was sworn in. It's really a remarkable interview I saw with the translation. I don't speak Hungarian. And he really just said very bluntly, we're going to shut you down for the lies you've told, for lies you've told about my family and the role, the negative role you've played in society. What do you predict is going to happen with the media and the Hungarian government's role in the media ecosystem in Hungary?
Well, as we have seen on Monday, so Magyar went on stage and he stood there for 3 hours straight answering journalists' questions. As of now, he really, you know, supports transparency and the free press. And in state media, it was his first appearance. No one invited him during the campaign, which is quite unusual because that's usually a rule that you have to invite these candidates to your show, but he wasn't invited.
Can anyone hear me?
Yes. Hi.
Yeah, I think we've got our next guest dialing in. So we still got a few more minutes with you. We're speaking with Flora Garamvolgyi, a journalist covering Central and Eastern Europe, talking about what happened in Hungary with the defeat of Viktor Orban. And we did get a listener question in, an email question. I wonder what people in the U.S. can learn about how to create a big and diverse coalition to beat Trump. In other words, is there a playbook here from how Orban was defeated that people in similar authoritarian right-wing government areas can mobilize and learn from to make progress and defeat these leaders?
Right. As a journalist, I wouldn't really want to give a playbook to anyone. But if your question is what Magyar did to defeat Orban, I would say that he really was on the ground. He was traveling to 6-7 different towns a day to meet with Hungarians in person, to talk to them, to ask what their main issues are. So he wasn't just posting on social media or campaigning online. He was really there in person. And I think Hungarians really did the majority of the job. They really showed up to the polls and they voted.
So Flora, what are you covering next? What are some of the big milestones that are in the near term here as Magyar takes power?
Well, right now I'm still in Budapest and I'm looking at what the new government is going to look like. And I'm obviously also focusing on the outgoing government and what is happening with them. I think there is a lot to cover for journalists in Budapest after Sunday. And I'm really curious of what Hungary's future is going to look like.
Well, we're so glad to have you there covering this important story. I just want to thank you for joining, Flora Garamvolgyi, journalist covering Central and Eastern Europe for The Guardian. Thanks so much for coming on and explaining what's happening in Hungary, such a dynamic situation and one with so much relevance for our listeners here in California and the United States. Thank you for joining us on Your Calls Media Roundtable.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
So coming up next, we're going to talk about a new Frontline special from El Faro and PBS about how President Bukele in El Salvador has cut deals with gang members and has used that leverage to take in prisoners from the U.S., deportees from the U.S. into their prison system in El Salvador. It's a truly amazing story. I hope you can stay with us for the next half hour here on our show. You're listening to Your Calls Media Roundtable. We'll be back just after this short break.